Good morning, everyone. This is so exciting. My name is Linda, and I am so pleased to be able to welcome all of you here today. I give a talk a few times about why Boston is awesome. And I think that this is a great example that so many people have gathered here on this beautiful weekend to celebrate children's literacy and children's books, which we have a great culture of here in Boston. And this is a great weekend to be in Boston too. We have the head of the Charles. We have this incredible book festival all within steps of here. We have our bearded bunch trying to punch their ticket to the World Series this evening. It's a great night to be in Boston. So my husband and I are really so proud to be part of this children's portion of the book festival. Unfortunately, with so much going on in the world, it's hard for me to find enough time to sit and enjoy the books that I'm interested in. But every night, I get to spend a magical half hour in a rocking chair with my little one and her blankie, and we just enter this magical world of children's literature, which is a tradition that we maintain, and I know so many families maintain. And Boston boasts an incredible community of authors, artists, and enthusiasts like me who enjoy these children's books. And I'm honored to be here today to introduce a prominent member of Boston's children's book community, Anna Stranaszewski. Is that good? Okay. This homegrown, award-winning author is a professor at Simmons College, sharing her passion and imagination with others who are interested in children's literature. Her fantastic fairy tale series takes children on an imaginative journey to the other side of Happily Ever After. Her new book, My Sort of Fairy Tale Ending, is coming out next month, and I can't wait to be able to start reading this with my little one. Here's Anna. Thank you all.
I am thrilled to be here today to introduce Mr. Tommy DePala to you all. When I first found out I would be introducing Mr. DePala, I must admit there was a little bit of shrieking, a little bit of fainting, but then I managed to calm my dog down, and I started to do research. You know, I knew Mr. DePala's books, but I wanted to know a little bit more about him as a person. And as I researched, I learned that he and I actually have quite a few things in common. So I'll tell you four of them. So number one, we are both authors with books coming out this fall. And in fact, Mr. DePala's latest book brings back the one and only Stregonona. And I have heard a rumor that she might be here sometime today. Number two, Mr. DePala and I both knew we wanted to be writers from a very early age. In fact, Mr. DePala declared at age four that he wanted to write and illustrate books. And, you know, I hope it works out for him. Number three, we both grew up dancing, singing, and acting. And I wonder if we ask very nicely if Mr. DePala might be willing to do a little tap dance for us later. And finally, he and I both have names that people have a hard time spelling and pronouncing. But as I kept researching, I realized that there's one big difference between Mr. DePala and myself. So I'm going to call on the audience and see if anybody can guess what that is. What do you think is the big difference between myself and Mr. DePala? Anybody? Yes. He's a boy and I'm a girl. Wow, you're very observant. Anyone else? Yes. You forgot. That happens. One more. Anybody?
There's somebody right there.
Oh. Yes. We have different clothes? We do. We were wearing the same outfit. It was very embarrassing, but then one of us had to change, so it was fine. Yes. Okay, well, I will tell you what I came up with. The big difference is the number of books we've published. So, as Linda said, I have my third book that will be published next month. And meanwhile, Mr. DePala has had over 250 books published. So the thing is, not only does Mr. DePala have lots and lots of books, but he has lots and lots of incredible books. You know, they're beautiful, they're funny, and they just make us feel things. And I think that's why we're all here today.
So I'm very excited to introduce to you Mr. Tommy DiPaola, and he'll be introduced by Kana, Duncan, and Kate.
No one said that I was old and she was young. And I'm proud of that. I'm proud that I've had a long career. And it's really wonderful to be here today. I'm in the end of what's called the dreaded book tour. That means I've been traveling for the last couple of weeks and meeting tons and tons of people. But last Saturday was a first for me. I was at Wegmans grocery store in Northboro, and they didn't put me by the ham, which they could have, but I had a lot of people, and I was really surprised, and they gave me supper. They gave me food to take home free. So that was, listen, some bookstores don't do that. But I just want to share a minute with you before we get started with what's going to happen is I'm going to be asked questions by these three wonderful children. I don't know what the questions are, and I'm going to answer them as honestly as I can. But before I do that, I had to write something for somebody because I was asked what a picture book is, ... And the first thing that came into my mind was what my editor told me a long time ago, almost 40 years ago. A picture book is 32 pages long with a picture on every page. But that's not the kind of answer she wanted. So I decided that what I want to share this with you. I said, a picture book is a small door to the enormous world of the visual arts. And I added that picture books are often the first visual art that young people see. So for me, it's important that a large variety of quality art styles be available to young eyes. So this is a perfect opportunity to meet all kinds of authors and artists who work in different styles. And that's very important for you parents and grandparents to expose your young people to as many different genre and illustrators and writers as you can. Promise me you'll do that. Okay, now let's start the program.
In your book, The Art Class, there's a little boy named Tommy who likes to draw. Did you like to draw when you were a kid?
I'll tell you a secret. The little boy Tommy in the book called The Art Lesson is me. So that actually happened in second grade, not in first grade like it was in the book, but in second grade, my teacher wouldn't let me use my 64 Crayola crayons. And I did like to draw. In fact, I actually did draw on the wall, under the wallpaper, not on the wallpaper, but I learned how to loosen the wallpaper and draw the walls. I did. I was told later not to do that, and I didn't. Instead, my father put big, sheets of butcher paper for my grandfather on the walls, and I drew on that. And that was a smart idea because my mother said, then I could take them down and sell them. My mother was a very smart woman. And I drew on my sheets. I did draw on the sheets under the pillow, under the cover. So that book is true. Okay?
Okay,
we'll go to the next question. Yeah.
What inspired you to write children's books instead of adult books?
Well, I think it's because when I was only four, years old, and I really did announce to my parents and my family that when I grew up, I was going to draw pictures and write stories for books and be an artist, and I was going to sing and tap dance on the stage. That's why she asked me if I'd tap dance later, but I don't tap dance anymore.
Oh.
But I think the reason why I wanted to do books for children, even though I was a child, was because grown-up books didn't have any pictures in them.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, that's a good reason, isn't it? Thank you. I think so, too. Yeah. And if I do a book for grown-ups, I'll probably sneak a few pictures in. Okay?
Awesome.
Most authors base their characters off of people they know. Who inspired you to create Big Anthony?
Oh, who inspired me for Big Anthony in the Stregonona books? Big Anthony is, he isn't like my cousin Frankie, but he looks like my cousin Frankie. And my cousin Frankie for years swore that he was not Big Anthony. I think he thought he was handsomer than Big Anthony. And then Stregonona became famous. And so then my cousin Frankie said, oh, Tommy, use me for Big Anthony. So, you know, I had to wait a long time before he admitted it. But I liked the fact that Frankie had red hair. My cousin Frankie, he was the Italian part of my family that had red hair and green eyes. So I made Big Anthony look like Frankie. And Big Anthony is like all of us. He isn't dumb. He's not stupid. He just doesn't pay attention. And I think we can all relate to that one. You have another question?
Many of your books retell classic stories. What kind of things do you keep in your books, and what kind of things do you add?
Well, you know, if I'm going to retell a folktale or a classic folktale, now, for instance, I wouldn't retell a classic story like Tom Sawyer or Hitty, Her First 100 Years, or Make Way for Ducklings. Those stories have already been told, and those are original stories. Just like Stregonona is based on a folktale, the first one, but then all the rest are original. And so if anybody started to retell those, they'd be, quote, stealing my ideas. But in the first one, that's the same story that the Sorcerer's Apprentice, you know, the Sorcerer's Apprentice, where the brooms fill up the castle with water, and also the porridge pot story. It's a classic folktale that's in every culture, Indian, Chinese, Turkish, but it wasn't. I couldn't find a version that was Italian. So I made the Italian one up, and I changed the porridge pot to what? To pasta. It was without, you know, I didn't have to think. But that's what I like about retelling folk tales, old tales, because the old tales came down to us from the audible, the verbal passing down. Like people would sit around the campfire and tell stories, just like my Irish grandfather would tell me stories. He told me the best stories in the world, and I can't repeat one of them today to you, not because I don't remember, but because I'd be arrested. So that's why I like to retell folktales. Yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
What inspired you to write Stregonona in Italian?
Oh, you mean to put Italian words in the...
Yeah.
Oh, well, because, you know, when I did the first Stregonona, I noticed that, first of all my life, nobody could pronounce my last name. I was called Tommy Di Paola, because it's A-O-L-A. And that's not how you pronounce it in Italian. The A-O sound is like ow. And the only other language where the A-O combination is like an ow, it's sometimes in Portuguese it is, but is in Hawaiian. The A-O sound is pronounced ow, just like in southern Italy. But I thought it would be a good way for some of these, I'm half Irish, so I can say this. I thought it would be a good way for some Irish kids to learn some Italian words. And the only problem was I had a good friend who taught children's literature in Louisiana. And you don't want to hear how she pronounced the Italian words, really. I was Tommy De Paola. And she told me it would be easier for me to change the pronunciation of my name than to get in touch with all 600 students that she had taught over the years to tell them that my name was De Paola. But I didn't change my name. So that's why I put that Italian in. I like to put, I put Spanish in some books as well, because I like to, if I could spell Gaelic, I'd put that in some of my Irish books, but you can't spell it. It's got too many vowels in it. But I like to, that's a good way to learn language.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Thank you.
Because I'm learning Italian at school.
Oh, are you?
And, yeah.
So you know how to say arrivederci.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I found your books really helpful.
Oh, good.
For learning.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. Tell the teacher I said you should get an A, okay?
Okay. Oh, well.
What is the story behind your story, Stregonona?
What's the story behind it? The first Stregonona is a retelling of the porridge pot story, where the helper gets a hold of the magic and doesn't know how to do it right because Big Anthony doesn't pay attention and he doesn't listen to the words that stop the pot. Just like this in the Sorcerer's Apprentice, he doesn't know the words that stop the water from the brooms from filling up the water tank. So then from that point on, I just took what I would, you know, I don't really think about the Strega Nona stories. This might sound a little weird, but I tell people that I channel Strega Nona. You know, in my dream, she comes and she says, "Have I got a story for you?" And on this new book, I realized that I hadn't done anything about the magic potions that she made for young ladies who wanted husbands. So that was the beginning of the new book that I'm here for, which is called Does It Again. And Strega Nona doesn't use magic. She uses common sense. So I just like, and I decided to tell the story about Strega Nona because a lot of people think that Strega Nona is a character from old Italian folklore. She's not. I invented her. So I did Strega Nona, her story, to set the record straight. Okay. How are we doing on time? Are you doing okay? Our timekeeper, are we doing all right? Oh, doing all right? Okay. Another question?
I think that your illustrations kind of look Play-Doh-y. How do you make...
Play-Doh-y?
Yeah.
Oh.
How do you make them look like that?
Well, I don't know since I've never used Play-Doh.
Oh.
I use paint and brushes and pencils. So maybe you're thinking of the shapes of the characters and maybe sometimes the colors. I love color. I don't use a computer. I'm one of the few people left in the world that doesn't illustrate. No, I'm not. I'm only kidding. But a lot of young artists are using the computer. I use paper, and I use brushes, and I use paint, and I mix my colors. I don't use colors out of a jar. I mix them all. And I'm going to be having a one-man show of my early, early work. Meaning, that means just me, just pictures of from when I was a little boy and when I was in art school, from about junior high to maybe 1975 at Colby Sawyer College in the town of New London, New Hampshire, where I live. The show is going to be up from the 7th of November to December 20th. And then next year, it's called Then, meaning then. And next September, I'm having a show called Now. And I don't even know what's going to be in that show yet because I have to work on paintings.
Oh.
But thank you for, when you say they look like Play-Doh, what that says to me is you like them, that they look familiar to you and that you're comfortable with them.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's what I try very hard to do because an artist named Henri Matisse, who's one of my favorite artists, he made this statement. He said that he didn't want people, when they looked at his paintings, to be upset or try to figure out how he did it or what he was trying to say. He wanted them to feel as comfortable as if they were sitting in an armchair. And that's what I'd like, if people look at my pictures in my books, to feel very comfortable and even familiar with the pictures. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you.
We've all been talking about Strega Nona.
Yeah.
What inspired Bill and Pete go down the Nile?
Oh, you know what? Yeah. National Geographic. Yeah, I was in my bathroom and reading that. I was just in there reading. And I was reading National Geographic, and I read an article about the symbiotic relationship between certain animals. And the symbiotic relationship is animals that help each other out. And there's a bird that helps eat the ticks off rhinoceroses.
Really?
Because the rhinoceros can't, you know, turn around and get the ticks off its back.
Mm.
And the bird rides on the right. You look at pictures and you'll see these birds, they call them tick birds, you know, riding on the back of rhinoceroses. And I found out that the Egyptian crocodile, the Nile crocodile, has a symbiotic relationship with a bird called the Egyptian plover. And the Egyptian plover When the crocodile eats, after it eats, it opens its mouth. This is true. Opens its mouth and leaves its mouth open, and the bird flies down and cleans in between the crocodile's teeth. So I said, oh, that bird is a crocodile toothbrush. So I thought, what a great idea for a story. And I knew Jim Marshall around that time. Jim Marshall's sadly no longer with us. But Jim, I told Jim Marshall about it, and he said, oh, what a great idea. He had just published George and Martha. So he said, oh, what a great idea that is. So I went ahead, and Bill is a little boy crocodile, and he's just got his first teeth. So when you get your first teeth, you have to get a toothbrush. So his mother bought Pete, who was Bill's toothbrush, and they became best friends. And that's where I got the idea for that book. And they had adventures. And the bad guy in the story is called The Bad Guy. Thought that was a good name for the bad guy.
Very straightforward, yes.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to take you with me. I like you. Yeah. You could be my inspiration and my watcher. You could say, I don't think that's funny, Tommy. Do it again. Yeah. Oh, I better not give him that job. Yeah, you'd be busy all day. Yes.
Yeah. All the time we have
is that
for questions.
All the time we have for questions?
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me just take a few minutes, a minute or two. I'll be autographing. Let me get out of here first, please. Don't come rushing at me. They're going to whisk me out. My bodyguard's going to whisk me out to the room across the hall. I'll be very happy to sign any books you have. You can take pictures. Just be patient because the line might be a little long, but I'm here as long as you are, so I'd be very happy to do that. So thank you so much for coming, and let's give a big round of applause to my questioners. Thank you so much, Jim.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
While Tommy is getting ready and signing the autographs, I'm going to read Stregonona Does It Again. So if you'd like to sit and hear about the story we've been talking about, this is Stregonona Does It Again by Tommy DiPaolo. Dear cousin Stregonona, as you know, our oldest daughter, Angelina, has grown into quite a beauty, which is wonderful and terrible all at once. All the young men of the town are chasing after her. Every night, they keep the whole household awake while they sing love songs. They leave so many flowers and gifts at the gate, we can hardly get in or out. They are a general nuisance. All except Hugo, the son of Duke Fabio. Angelina claims she is in love with him, but he doesn't seem to notice. He's always looking at himself in a mirror. My Angelina is very unhappy. My wife and I think the only solution is for her to leave our village until she forgets Hugo. Would you mind if she stayed with you? She can arrive in a few days. Grazie, thank you, dear cousin, Duke Andrea di Limone and his wife. P.S., I want to warn you that Angelina is a handful. Well, said Stregonona to Big Anthony and Bambalona, it looks like we're going to have a visitor. My cousin's daughter is coming. It will be nice for you two to have some company your own age. I'll give Angelina my bedroom, and I'll sleep on the bed in the kitchen. Now, let's get ready. And here they prepare the room for Angelina's visit. Here comes Stregonona. Here she comes, Stregonona, said Big Anthony. Benvenuto, Angelina, welcome. Povero me, dear me, Stregonona said softly. So much luggage. Big Anthony, help unload the cart, Stregonona said. And Bambalona, please show Angelina her room. Angelina was not an easy guest. I don't like this room. My room at home is blue with pink flowers. I don't eat pasta. At home, I eat fresh fruit. I need a maid. At home, I have a maid. Bambalona, you can be my maid. I've never been a maid. What does a maid do? Asked Bambalona. First of all, she wears a uniform, and she does everything I tell her to do. So Bambalona does everything she tells her to do. I need a footman. At home, I have a footman, Angelina said. Big Anthony, you can be my footman. What's a footman? Big Anthony asked. Well, my footman will wait on me, open the door for me, run errands for me, and help Bambalona do everything I say. And, Angelina said with a big smile, you'll get to wear a beautiful uniform just like Bambalona. So Big Anthony helps Bambalona do everything that Angelina tells them to do. Angelina called Big Anthony and Bambalona to her. I have this picture of my love, Hugo. Let's make a shrine for it. After all, we are both the fairest of them all. Gather branches, flowers, anything to make it pretty. So they build Hugo a shrine. It's beautiful, Angelina said. Now, let's take a stroll. Footman, you will hold my ombrino, parasol. Maid, you will walk ahead of me carrying a basket full of flowers. You will scatter petals so I can walk on them instead of the dirty path. So they go on a stroll into town. Ragazzo! Boy, Angelina called to a child who was playing. Run ahead to town and tell everyone that Angelina, daughter of Duke Andrea de Limon, will honor them with a visit today. So they should prepare to meet me. Back at home, Straganona was looking for Big Anthony and Bambalona. Where did those two go? She asked herself. Oh, well, I'll just have to do their chores myself. Povero me, dear me, Straganona said when she saw Angelina's room. What happened here? Then Straganona spied the shrine. Well, I'll have to do something about all this. Meanwhile, back in town, Angelina waved to the crowd. Arrivederci tutti, goodbye all, don't be sad, I'll try to return. Who does she think she is? The mayor's wife said. I hope she never comes back. Later that night, Big Anthony and Bambalona went to see Straganona. How much longer is she going to stay? Big Anthony asked. She keeps me so busy, I don't have time to do my chores. Me too, chimed in Bambalona. She has me running around like a crazy chicken. And it's made this, made that, and you should have seen her in town. She bossed everyone around, even the mayor and the sisters of the convent. Don't worry, my children, Straganona said. I have a plan. Angelina, called Straganona, can you come join me by your shrine? So, said Straganona, it looks like you care a lot for Hugo. Oh, I do, Straganona, but he doesn't even know he deserves me, Angelina complained. Well, maybe we can help, said Straganona, holding up the magic book. In here is a spell for a potion for young ladies who want husbands. And I have another idea. Because Hugo likes to look at himself so much, why not change the picture in your shrine with a mirror? Oh, Straganona, yes, 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 cried Angelina. But you must be patient, my dear. Let's see what happens. That night, Straganona wrote a letter to Duke Andrea. Dear Cousin Andrea, I think I have the solution for your problem. Please come to fetch Angelina, but be sure to bring along Hugo at any cost. I don't care how you manage it, just do it. Amore bace, love and kisses, your cousin Straganona. A few days later, a letter arrived. Angelina, your father is coming to take you home, Straganona said. And guess what? Hugo is with him. "Now, Angelina," Stregonona whispered, "here is the special potion. The minute Hugo sees the shrine, drink it." "What will happen?" Angelina asked. "You'll see," said Stregonona. Hugo fell in love with the shrine immediately. "How beautiful," he said, staring at himself. "You really understand me." "We understand each other," Angelina said. "Will you marry me?" Hugo asked. "Yes, yes, yes," shouted Angelina. "I thought you'd never ask." And the two packed and were off to be married. "Arrivederci, goodbye. Safe journey and best wishes for a happy wedding," everyone called out as the carts were leaving. "Boy, is he going to be busy," said Big Anthony. "So is she," said Bambalona. "They deserve each other," Stregonona said. "How did you know?" Big Anthony and Bambalona asked. "Uh-huh. The magic of mirrors," said Stregonona. "They were both in love with themselves." The end. Thank you. Go get a signature.